From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in 2017 when sales of electric vehicles set records in North America and the world as a whole. The number of plug-ins, according to Fleet Karma Online, has now topped 40 options, prices creeping slowly downward, and yet plug-in sales remain only around 1% of the North American market. There are serious obstacles for the electric vehicle or EV industry. So what will it take to achieve more widespread EV adoption? This hour, it begins with a question for any car buyer. Are you considering an electric vehicle? And if the answer is no, what would change that? On March 6th, the Rochester Electric Vehicle Accelerator is teaming up with the Chamber of Commerce to host a workplace charging challenge event at Radio Social. They want charging stations everywhere. They want more options, more opportunities to go EV because, as we learned getting ready for this program, a lot of people are telling us they would like to go EV, but they have no idea where they could charge. They don't think they could do it at work. Let's talk about that. My guests this hour include Carolyn Levine, program lead for the Rochester Electric Vehicle Accelerator, known as ROCK EV. Can you tell us a little bit? First of all, thank you for being here. Can you tell us about what that is, Carolyn?
Yeah, thanks for having me. ROCK EV is an innovative community-wide initiative. Our goal is to get more people driving electric vehicles. So we work with public-private partnerships to encourage people to drive electric and create opportunities for them to test drive the cars before they make the purchase.
All right, very good. Thanks for being here. Also here is Shannon Ely, manager of the Office of Future Leadership, which is the loftiest title ever. It's through the Rochester Chamber of Commerce. Shannon, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thanks so much.
Also here is Sue Hopkins, who is an EV driver. For how long, Sue? When did you get an EV?
Last July.
How do you like it?
I love it.
All right. So we're going to talk to Sue about her experience there. And on the line with us is Ben Prochazka, who is the vice president of the Electrification Coalition out of Colorado. And Ben, everything that I read tells me that in the world of marching toward EV, you guys are doing it most successfully. How did you do that?
Well, I appreciate that as a statement, and thank you for having us.
Sure.
The Electrification Coalition is actually a D.C.-based organization. I just happen to have a Colorado number. But we as an organization are working to accelerate the adoption of plug-in electric vehicles across the country. And so far, we've started by writing something called the Electrification Roadmap, which established a framework of policies and actions that communities and policymakers can take across the country. And then since then, we've basically been in the process of sort of proof of concept. So we've been developing accelerator communities around the country to help put those policies on the ground and, you know, in essence, test drive them, pun intended. But I think in this case, Rochester is an extension of that. We did our first one in Northern Colorado. And then we, through funding and partnership with NYSERDA, the New York State Energy Development Authority, we have the opportunity to work with Rochester, and then that effort's expanding to Ithaca as well. And so hopefully, as we continue these efforts, we can continue to get more and more people to plug in and drive electric.
All right. So I already heard from so many listeners just this morning in the last 3 hours who want to share their questions and stories, and we're going to do that. But listeners, if you want to call, you can do that as well. It's 844-295-TALK. 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Before we do anything, the reason we're here today is because you got something coming up in a couple of weeks. I think it's less than a couple. What is March 6th? What day is that?
That's a week from today, next Tuesday.
Oh my gosh. I said a couple of weeks. It's amazing. All right, so what's going on a week from today? Tell us about the challenge that's coming up here.
Sure. So we're doing a workplace charging challenge. We want to encourage employers to provide charging for their employees. So we've partnered with the Greater Rochester Chamber of Commerce, and we're hosting an event on Tuesday, March 6th at 4:45 to 7 at Radio Social. And it's an interactive event, so people can come out and learn all about what it takes to provide workplace charging for your employees, and we'll have a bunch of different vehicles that people can test drive. So it's a really great hands-on opportunity for people to learn about electric vehicles, electric vehicle charging, and specifically workplace charging.
Okay, I want to hear from all of our guests on this, and I want to start with Carolyn, because the question of why EVs is on a lot of people's minds. It was, you know, really 10, 15 years ago, probably 15 years ago, when hybrids were much more of an idea than regularly seeing a Prius on the road. And the most common question I would hear is, you know, why do we need to do this? And then can I get this car serviced? You know, is it going to work the same way? Does it look good? So all of those questions are now coming up for people who are interested in EVs. Why, in your mind, how do you sort of rank the reasons that why EVs matter?
Sure. Why they matter, I mean, you know, we are, as a nation, really dependent on oil. 92% of vehicles on the road run on fossil fuels. So by diversifying the source of fuel, going electric, we're reducing that reliance on oil. So it's great for American energy security. And, you know, most of the EVs on the road are zero emission. So there's no tailpipe emissions. So that leads to cleaner air, less pollution. So the impact on public health is really great. And then, you know, EVs are really fun to drive. They're really good cars. You know, Sue can talk a little bit more. They accelerate really quickly. And it's just a really smooth ride.
Sue, you got yours last July?
I did.
What did you think about before deciding to get an EV?
I'd say last year, this time, I probably put the idea of driving an electric car in the same category as I would put investing in Bitcoin or riding a fixed gear bike. It just seemed like unnecessary and confusing. And what really, you know, I had heard about it, but I think one thing that changed my mind was that I met someone that owned one. And she seemed like someone like me, and it just became a lot more of an accessible idea. And then the more I looked into it, the more I realized it really wasn't as complicated and techy, I guess, if you will, as it seemed to be.
What were the biggest reasons you thought going into that process, I can't get an EV? Was it about charging? Was it about how far you could go? You know, that kind of a thing? Was it about the price of it?
It was all of those. Price, number one. For many years, I think they were out of my range. And I think just in the last couple of years, there's a couple of companies that have come out with models that are more in line with what I think most people can afford, I guess. You know, your sort of $20,000 to $30,000 car, which is still a very expensive car. But when you add the tax rebates and other kinds of incentives, it brings it down to a much more reasonable price.
We talked to listeners this morning who said, I'm convinced you can't get these things for less than 40. Not true?
Not true.
Okay.
Although I would qualify that with the type of car. If you get a fully electric car, I don't know the cost ranges for that. If you get a hybrid plug-in electric like I have, the prices are a little bit lower.
Okay. And so let's continue around because we've got a lot to hit. I want to get back to that term zero emissions too, which is really key to this conversation. We're going to get back there in just a second. But let me turn to Shannon Ely, who is the manager of the Office of Future Leadership through the Chamber. Why is the Chamber interested in sort of essentially endorsing this event and endorsing the idea that the workplace should be a place where you can know that you can drive an EV and charge there?
Absolutely. If the Chamber can help our members, who are employers in this community, increase the convenience and the affordability of charging. That really goes toward talent attraction. It goes towards innovation, sustainability, which is something that, you know, we do have to look at going forward, as Carolyn mentioned. And really it's going towards helping make Rochester a high-tech community, which is what we aspire to be, sort of like the next Silicon Valley. You got to have that top cutting-edge technology. So it's definitely something we support. And this event is really going to make it more accessible for our employers to take a look at. They might think it's too much of a financial burden, too much infrastructure, but I think that they're going to learn through going through this event, going through the passport, that it is something that, you know, that's not too difficult to undertake, and that it's something that can improve their, you know, their talent attraction and the quality of their workforce.
All right, so Shannon, if I'm a chamber member and I called you tomorrow and said, I want to go to this event, but we're in. We want to get our workplace. We want workplace charging. What does that mean for me, though? What do I have to do?
Absolutely. There's going to be a lot of great resources and materials. There's surveys that you can disperse to your employees to learn, you know, you might have a lot of people driving EVs, but you didn't know it. Site planning. policies for, you know, charging or how you're going to work out the, you know, the cost. And then also, you know, just some fun ways that you can announce and launch this and have it really be something that that puts you on the map as an employer.
Okay. What's it going to cost an employer, Carolyn? If they're worried that it's going to cost a lot or it's going to be sort of infrastructurally cumbersome, how do you answer those questions?
Well, first I would say there's a couple different options in terms of charging stations. So depending on your workforce and the needs of your community or needs of your employees, you have a couple different options. Level one charging is really just an outlet. You can plug into any old outlet and charge your car that way. Level two charger is going to cost a little bit more because you need to buy the equipment and install it.
A level two charger?
Yep.
Because you just said you can plug an EV into a wall outlet.
Yep.
Nothing special.
Yep.
You got one in your garage, you can do it in your garage.
Absolutely.
Is it just slower? Like, what's level two?
Yeah, so a level one is slower. Level one is just an outlet.
Okay. Yeah,
yep, so 90% of people charge at home that way. And, you know, it takes a little bit longer, but most people will just plug it in at night, it charges overnight, and then they're good to go in the morning. So it's really a lot easier than most people think.
Okay. A level two charger, though, is something that the workplace should get? If I'm an employer, should I get something different than just regular wall outlets?
So most of the charging stations that you see around town are level two, and those are going to deliver a faster charge. So it'll take a few hours, you know, 2 to 4 versus 6 to 8 for level one. And there's a lot of options for that. You can have a networked or a non-networked station, and that just means a networked station collects data on the charging, and it can tell you information about how long people are there, how much energy they're using, et cetera. Or you can just have a quote-unquote dumb station that it just delivers power, and that's it. And so the pricing will vary based on if it's smart or not. But there's also a tax rebate in New York State. So 50% of the cost, up to $5,000 for the installation of a charging station, is covered by a tax rebate.
So the average installation of a charging station is around
$10,000? No.
Okay.
It's tough to quantify because there's so many variables. Where it's going, do you need to do construction at the site to put it in, trenching, all of that? You know, maybe $5,000.
Okay.
Maybe Ben can provide a little more at the national level of what the perspective is.
Yeah, go ahead, Ben.
Yeah, so I think in general, well, there's two things I'd say. One is if you want to find out about some of the opportunities for workplace charging, the Rock EV website is a great resource and it'll be a sort of ongoing place to find just good information. But the cost is basically, I would think of it this way, the infrastructure, meaning the hardware, the actual thing that you plug into your car, can be somewhere between $500 and $5,000. And it's just like anything else. It's about the features and what capability that piece of hardware has. And so if you want to have, you know, charge for it, create pricing structure, if you want to limit usage, there's reasons why you'd need to spend more money on a charger. If you don't need to do that, then it can be much cheaper. In fact, you can go down to your local Home Depot right now and buy a level two charger. So that just gives you a sense of how easy they are to get. You can order it on Amazon today. And then on the install, so actually putting the charger in, that's where there's just, as Carolyn was getting into, it differs a lot on a per location. You know, most of the time people are going to put it in and they're going to put it as close to their building as possible because that's the right way to help people or your employees see that there's charging available. And so that's going to save costs because you're not having to run a line to a transformer and make sure that charger gets power. But that's where that can range anywhere from, you know, I've had locations do it for as cheap as $750, and I've had locations where it costs much more. And generally speaking, that's just each place needs to do a quick evaluation to figure out how much the construction cost and the install cost are going to be. But the hardware itself, it can be pretty inexpensive or it can be expensive depending on the feature set that somebody wants.
All right, before I get to your phone calls, your emails, your tweets, and your questions and comments on this, as we talk about the world going toward electric vehicles. And Jane, hang there first. We'll come to you first on the phones in a moment here. But Ben, let me just follow up a little bit here because I want you to help me envision what is happening in other places a little bit more than it's happening here and what might start to change if the Rochester EV Accelerator's Workplace Charging Challenge is successful. I want to know what a workplace might look like. And you know, Carolyn made an important point. Every workplace is different. Some might need more construction, infrastructure changes. But what's an example of a workplace that, you know, spent the money to put a charging station in? How many people can use it? How many vehicles can use it? If you're a workplace with 12 cars and eventually 10 of them are electric vehicles, can they all use it? What if you have 100 employees? I'm trying to envision in the future, if we really scale up what's happening with EV, what these charging stations at work could handle.
Sure. So I'm going to use a couple of examples that I think are more sort of aggregated. So in this case, one effect is that workplaces that offer charging for employees are 6 times more likely to own an electric vehicle. And so there are more than 800 workplace charging locations across the country, at least that have reported into a workplace charging challenge that happened nationally. And so that just tells you what the impact can be. If you offer workplace charging, it's going to greatly increase the likelihood that somebody is going to buy a car and plug in at work. Most of the time, people are buying these, or the workplace charging is offered, and it's not, the expectation isn't you go there and you are starting from empty and filling up to full. It's more about the idea that you then come to work, you're able to plug in for an hour or a couple hours, and it's about giving you that extra range that one might need to be able to make an EV work for travel and their commuting purposes. And then it's also an incentive. So it's just the idea that companies are sort of figuring out ways to differentiate themselves. How do they recruit the best and the brightest? This is the idea that you're offering another sort of incentive that shows that you're a place of innovation that cares about how people get to work in addition to what they work on. Some of the examples of companies, we actually worked with Hewlett-Packard in Fort Collins, Colorado. And it started out with just a couple EV drivers. And then within the year of the program, they were upwards of 25 to 30 EV drivers who were, you know, participating largely because of that workplace charging challenge and the opportunity to be able to plug in at work. But there's other examples of places where, you know, it can greatly increase the number of drivers and can get up to the 100 or 200. I think in Rochester, the idea is let's get some of these in the ground. Let's get locations offering workplace charging. And then hopefully that gives the opportunity to increase the impact of the program and see more people driving electric. But I think we'll be starting a lot smaller and looking at that, you know, Hewlett-Packard example is what might happen at a Rochester location.
All right. So one of our callers wants to take us back to the beginning and make sure everybody understands what the heck we're talking about. And that's Keith, who's usually one of the smarter callers, but he's struggling with this one. Go ahead, Keith.
Okay. Well, I'm so smart caller.
You are smart. You are. You are.
Well, I have common sense. A lot of people don't have common sense. you're speaking of electric vehicles. Are we speaking of truly electric vehicles like Teslas and the Nissan Leaf and Mitsubishi? Or are we talking of hybrids like the Toyota Prius? Or are we talking of Volt, which is truly electric, but it has an electric generator on it that creates electricity when the battery gets low, even though it has a gasoline motor? Or are we talking...
Okay, I got you.
Wait a minute, last one, the fuel cell, which creates electricity using hydrogen.
Okay, so hang there, Keith.
That's a follow-up question.
Fair question. Yeah, hang there. Carolyn, you want to start? I'm going to turn to Carolyn Levine, Keith, who's the program lead for the Rochester Electric Vehicle Accelerator.
Yeah, that is a great question. And at Rock EV, we consider anything that plugs in an electric vehicle. So that could be a fully electric model like a Tesla, or it could be what's called a plug-in hybrid electric vehicle like the Chevy Volt that you mentioned.
But not a hybrid like a Prius.
Correct.
No.
It's a plug-in hybrid.
Yeah.
So the newest Prius, actually the Prius Prime, is a plug-in. That's actually what Sue drives. So anything that you have to plug in to charge is what we would consider.
Okay. Now I feel real guilty because I'm driving along in my high-performance premium gas sports car that I just took out of the garage. But when you state that electric is cleaner, on the electric side it is, but if you're getting it from Midwest fire cold power plants to recharge the batteries, it's not. So if you take that in mind, then the best way would be to a fuel cell, or even better yet, bypass the electric vehicles and make them all hydrogen powered, which they're doing, I believe Germany's way ahead of us, because we have an endless supply of hydrogen. We could use windmills at night, run the electricity to water, distill the water into hydrogen and oxygen, and then use the hydrogen to power a vehicle.
Okay, so
I think that's what Germany is. Electric works great for a very dense urban center, but I live out in Farmington. I drive maybe 100 miles a day. It might be hard-pressed other than a Tesla.
Yeah, Keith, that is a great point and a great question. Thank you for the phone call. Before I turn to our panel for this, because I think this is one of the more important parts of this conversation, when we really talk about what zero emissions means or is it better for the environment, I want to read from two different sources, and then we will turn to our guests on this. The first comes from Fleet Karma, who predicted that in 2018, one of the five trends with EVs is moving toward, quote, true zero emissions. Let me read from their article. Quote, for years, the dirty little secret about electric cars was the energy source people used to charge them. In areas where coal-fired plants powered the grid, these EVs were far from the zero emissions ideal you see on a Tesla license plate. However, as more states upgrade their grids with renewables, we are getting closer to that goal. The best way for individual EV owners to guarantee zero emissions transport is generating solar power from their homes. Tesla's SolarCity, Sunrun, and several other companies offer solar products for homes. As more consumers become conscious about building emissions and these products get more affordable, we should see more solar homes with EVs in the driveway. End quote. Now let me read from Forbes, and this note just sent from producer Megan Mack on this. According to the Edison Electric Institute, 7 million zero-emission vehicles will be on American roads by 2025. This could have significant impacts on the grid, as charging one EV is nearly equivalent to adding three houses to the power system. End quote. I want to turn to Bren Prochazka first. He's the vice president of the Electrification Coalition. I thought Keith's questions turned me in that direction, and these are important points, Ben, so why don't you take it from there?
Sure. I think they're all good questions. I think as a starting point, there's lots of reasons why driving an EV can be important, and its emissions profile is just one. We actually care a lot about the idea that right now, having our transportation have an oil monopoly on our transportation puts us at great economic and national security risk. And so by driving electric, one of the things that we're doing is we're plugging into the grid, and then we can have a diverse fuel source. So we aren't sort of held hostage by the impacts of an oil commodity and how it's globally set. So it's important for a lot of different reasons, and that's a big reason for us. Can we actually reduce our demand on oil by plugging in? The other piece is, you know, the easiest way to talk about it is an EV is the only car on the road that's going to get cleaner over time. And so as our grid gets cleaner, as people decide to use solar or wind or other distributed types of energy generation, that means every single mile is going to get cleaner in an EV. And you can't say that about a gas, an internal combustion engine. And so it's really a step forward in terms of the idea of both EVs are, as you know, we've talked about, but they're fun to drive, but they're also going to allow you to drive with your conscience and think about these impacts. So we're lessening our oil dependency and reducing the emissions.
I think that's an important point. And Carolyn Levine from the Rochester Electric Vehicle Accelerator, it seems to me that EVs are one part of a layered solution on energy, and that, you know, it's not going to solve everything, but it can maybe move us in that direction. And I think Ben's right. I mean, gas-guzzling cars, you know what the energy source is. With an EV, you may not know it perfectly because you're plugging in, but it may incentivize us to move in that direction.
Absolutely. And another thing to point out is that here in New York State, our grid is actually pretty clean. Less than 1% of our energy comes from coal. So the majority of the energy here in New York is coming from hydro and nuclear. So we have a pretty clean grid to start with, which kind of sets us up a little bit better maybe than other states. We're in a pretty good position already. But like Ben said, EVs are the only car that's going to keep getting cleaner as we clean up the grid.
All right, so I want to ask Shannon, how many of your members, do you know how many members? Anybody signed up yet for the Workplace Charging Challenge?
We have six. Six already.
Six already?
Yep, we're going to be recognizing them at the event. We've invited the press so that they can be recognized for being on the cutting edge of this movement. And we're really looking forward to that.
All right, so six. And if you're just joining us, what we're talking about is the Rochester EV Accelerator Workplace Charging Challenge. If you want your employer to do it, or if you run a company and you're thinking about it, where can people learn more? Where do they go?
Well, you can register for the event online.
Yep.
At the Greater Rochester Chamber website. You could also register through us. info@rochesterevs.com is our email. And if you want more information, you can email us. But you can register online for the event. It's free for chamber members, and we would be happy to have you attend as a guest of Rock EV.
All right. Before I get back to your phone calls and the flood of questions and comments on this, I want to ask Sue Hopkins a couple more questions because she's an EV driver here. I wonder if we're all EV. They're all EV drivers here. Are you an EV driver over there, Carolyn?
I am. Yes.
You probably have to be, don't you?
Yeah. BMW actually loaned us an i3 for the program, which was very generous.
I'm so sorry.
I've been driving it. Yeah, an i3, and it's really great. I mean, honestly, before I had access to this vehicle, I knew about electric vehicles because I talk about them all day. But without having that hands-on experience and knowing honestly how easy it is to plug in and how range anxiety, this idea that you won't have enough battery to get where you need to go, it's really based on your perception that you drive more than you do.
Okay, so that's important. And I want to talk to Sue because here I want to ask Sue all the questions her friends ask. Number one, what's the kind of EV you got?
It's a Prius Prime.
A Prius Prime.
Mm-hmm, which is a plug-in hybrid. So you charge it and it gets about 30 to 35 miles of electric range. And then once that runs out, it just switches to regular gas engine or, a hybrid engine.
Do you find yourself thinking before a trip, how far can I get here? Will I use any gas, I guess?
No, most days, so especially in Rochester, a 30-mile range is enough to get you to work and back most days. And so most of the time, most trips that you make, you don't think about it. If you're making a long trip, you pretty much know I'm going to run out in 25, 30 miles, and then it'll just switch over to be a regular hybrid, in which you still get 50, 55 miles a gallon, which is still pretty good.
Okay. Did you find any availability of credits or whatnot to purchase? I don't know if there are for vehicle
yes.
purchasers.
Yeah, yes. That was a major factor in my decision was the New York State has a rebate and the federal government also has a tax credit. And you add those together and it's a fairly significant amount. And I won't say how much it is. It's different for each type of car depending on the range. So the more range you get with electric, the more your rebate is how I understand it. So my car would have a different rebate than a Tesla or another model.
Okay, but Carolyn, you used the term range anxiety, which is not a term I'd heard before, but it makes sense. So Prius Prime is one thing. Let's say you've got a Volt and your range is, I've heard 40 miles. Is that not right? Is it 30? Is it usually around, I guess, 35, 40?
So a Volt is similar to the Prius Prime in that it's a hybrid as well. So it once the battery range runs out, the gas engine will kick in. So at that point, it's really just like a regular car. Take something like the Chevy Bolt, which is with a B, like boy. That is fully electric. That has about a 238-mile range. So for, Rochester, the average commute is 21 miles. So 238 miles is, more than enough to get you to work and back.
Does it give you kind of a countdown on how many miles you have left?
Yes.
Okay. So you know what you've got left with it.
Yep.
So you can plan trips accordingly.
Yes.
If you are traveling from Rochester to Boston, for example, if you're traveling from Rochester to Kansas City, to Chicago, will you have to know on the way where can I stop and charge?
Yes, that would be advised. There's a lot of...
I guess what I'm asking is it easy to find out?
Yep. There's a lot of apps and websites out there. The Alternative Fuels and Data Center has a really cool tool where you can plot out your trip, and it'll show you where you can stop to charge on the way. So there's a lot of ways that you can plan ahead if you know they're going to have to stop to charge.
All right, we got to get to our phone calls. Our phone is lit up, and I knew this would happen. But let me ask Ben Prochazka one more question along these lines. Ben, you said that when workplaces offer charging stations, people become, what, 6 times more likely to buy an EV? Something like that?
That's right.
Okay.
That's right. Exactly.
So I'm wondering what you see moving the market. Is it most moved by employers then, or is it some other demand of consumers to install, for charging stage? What is moving the most change in this field?
Sure. And just a quick note for those who are on the line, there are three types of charging. So there's you plug in at home. That's level one, just like your standard outlet. And I'll answer your question in just a second, Evan. The second is the level two charger, which is equivalent to a washer or dryer in your household. And then the last one is a DC fast charger. And so the way to think about it is the DC fast charger is the fastest car charger, and it can charge from 0 to about 80% in about 20 to 30 minutes. So gives people a good sense of just what does that look like and how do you think about different travel times. On this idea of what's going to make the market shift, part of the reason that we are working on something like Rochester EV Accelerator and have other accelerators around the country is this idea that it's not just about the workplace charging program, but we're working to make this accelerate the adoption of plug-in electric vehicles. So we don't want it to happen in 20 years. We want it to happen as quickly as possible because it's critical that we stem the demand for oil right now, that's something that we do immediately. And so we're not only implementing programs like workplace charging, but then we're also looking at a broad-based policy framework. So what are other policies that communities could undertake or set up that are going to help encourage the accelerated adoption of plug-in electric vehicles? That includes sort of monetary and non-monetary incentives. So Sue mentioned the state credit. There's a federal credit also that's up to $7,500 on the purchase of an EV. And so those are good sort of initial consumer incentives that exist. And then there's also a lot around outreach, education, and marketing. And so on the outreach and education front, that's really important. I think a lot of people who are in the market and might be thinking about an EV, they just don't realize that there might be 100 stations within their general community or general area that they have access to, because they're not the same as a gas station. They might not realize that, you know, you're not starting from zero and going to full every time like you do at a gas station. Every night we pull our car in, we plug in, and so we're, you know, giving it the 20 or 30 miles that we use that day. And every day you start with a full tank or a full battery. But I think in general, it's about the outreach and education. It's about getting people behind the wheel, and then it's about making sure people realize there's ample amount of infrastructure so they can plug in every day and get to where they need to go.
All right, listeners, we're talking about the Rochester EV Accelerator Workplace Charging Challenge. I'm late for our only break, and then we're coming back to your phone calls. So, Jane, David, Robert, we're going to come to you. We have a ton of emails and questions. We got a lot of interest. You just heard Ben Prochazka, who is the Vice President of the Electrification Coalition. And with us in studio, Carolyn Levine is the program lead for the Rochester Electric Vehicle Accelerator, known as Rock EV. Sue Hopkins is here. She's an EV driver since last July. And Shannon Ely is manager of the Office of Future Leadership through the Rochester Chamber of Commerce. We're here because next week, 1 week from today, at Radio Social, there is an event, and we'll tell you a little bit more about that as well. If you want to get involved or you want your company to get involved, we'll tell you more about that after our break. I'm Evan Dawson, Wednesday on The Next Connections. In our first hour, End the R-Word Day is coming. It's been a multi-year campaign to change the way we talk about our fellow Americans, our fellow human beings. We'll talk about that campaign. And in our second hour, the RPO's got a new season. We're going to preview it. We'll talk about inclusion in classical music. Talk with you Wednesday. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. David in Pittsford next on the phone. Go ahead, David.
I'd just like to mention a couple of things. First, there is a table showing the equivalent CO2 generation by various EVs in various states. New York State, because of the amount of renewable energy we have, mostly from hydroelectric, it's the Tesla Model S, which is the least efficient electric vehicle out there, generates CO2 at the rate of about 150 miles per gallon. In Wyoming, which has the highest amount of coal power generation, the CO2 is equivalent to about 50 miles per gallon. Then another thing I would just like to mention, and that is in terms of taking a long trip and charging, I don't know about a lot of the other cars, but the Tesla has a navigation screen, which I think a lot of modern cars have. And when you put your destination in, it plots a route and it shows all the charging stations in between and where you should be charging. And when it calculates the length of time to get to your destination, It includes the charging time, and then the map shows you how many free slots are available at each of the charging stations. And generally, when I drive cross-country, my charging time when I stop is about 15 minutes, and that gives me enough mileage to get to the next charger with about 50 miles to spare.
All right, David, thanks for the phone call. So there's one perspective. Carolyn, you want to add to that?
Yeah, just that David's talking specifically about Teslas, and they have their own network of superchargers. So Tesla is uniquely positioned to, like he said, help you get from point A to point B using their charging system.
Okay. Robert in Fairport next on the phone. Go ahead, Robert.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. There was a statistic earlier in the conversation here that I think was incorrect. I think one of the panelists said that New York power generation is mostly nuclear and hydroelectric. The numbers, according to the EIA.gov website, which looks at all New York electricity generation, says that a lot does come from hydro, 25%. A lot comes from nuclear, 36.5%. But natural gas-powered fired power plants account for about a third of electric generation, 32.2%. The other problem with this whole approach and trying to put all these cars on the grid is that down in New York City, they're going to be decommissioning one of the major nuclear power plants. I think it's called Nine Mile Point. So I think that they're looking for gas-fired plants to make up for that shortfall.
All right, Robert, thanks. I think, Carolyn, he was responding to some of what you said about power in the state here earlier. You want to respond there?
Yeah, no, just that what I was saying is less than 1% of the energy comes from coal. I think Ben can speak to the impact on the grid, which is one question that we do get often. So I think,
but he's right, the natural gas has a pretty big chunk right now, around a third.
Sure, yep.
Okay, go ahead, Ben.
Yeah, I mean, I think ultimately there's, you know, the big part of where natural gas ends up being a part of our energy production is especially when you're looking at peak demand. So it's the time when, you know, everybody flips on their air conditioner or their heater or whatever. One of the best things about EVs, and I think sometimes is sort of left off the table, is you plug those in at night. So it's at the time when the grid has the greatest spare capacity. So if anything, EVs are actually the best way to maximize the energy potential that our grid is producing and in the long term are going to make our grid more efficient and actually drive costs down. So it's only going to be a benefit to the grid in the long term.
One of our listeners on Twitter says, responding to Keith earlier, power plants, even coal, run at very high efficiency. Electric motors and batteries run at very high efficiency. It's still better to run an electric car while burning fossil fuels to charge the batteries. Just better all around, even if fossil fuels are powering the charge. So it's not necessarily just a shell game if we don't go to alternative energy. It's already better, they're saying, to charge the car if you can and go EV, just in terms of what we are consuming energy-wise. Okay, a lot to get through. So let me go ahead and just start reading some comments here that have come in. Juan says, I don't want to buy an EV because I would have to spend $2,500 to upgrade the electrical panel in my house. Carolyn, does that make sense to you?
My understanding is he would probably be able to just plug it into the regular outlet in his garage.
What would the $2,500, is that going to a level two? If you want to go level two, I don't know what it costs.
So I'm going to assume that's what he's talking about.
Yeah, I drove home and plugged it right into the wall and have done nothing to the electrical box in my house. So
no change.
No change.
Okay. Ben, do you know what he might be talking about?
I mean, everybody's house is different. Majority of people would be able to plug right into their garage outlet. If they want to install a level two charger, maybe they'd have to upgrade some stuff, but it should, you know, I can't imagine how it would cost $2,500.
Okay. Here is Joel, who says, I would buy an EV if it can carry my gear and get me to work and back. For my family, if it can hold us all, has decent cargo capacity, and the infrastructure exists for more than just trips around town. I hope my next personal car is electric. I'm less hopeful that my next family car is electric. That is an interesting one. And Carolyn Levine, you want to start on possible models for Joel? He's thinking, he's saying he's interested, but on what he needs for a pretty large family, he's not sure he can find it.
Yeah, and that's a question we get a lot. Like you said at the top of the hour, there's over 40 electric vehicle models out there today. So there's quite a bit more variety than most people are aware of. The Chrysler Pacifica hybrid electric minivan, it just came on the market last year, I think. And that has a 33-mile electric range, and that's a minivan. So plenty of space for kids, car seats, sports gear, you know, whatever else you're toting around town. And then, like I said, there's over 40 models available. So there's quite a bit of variety in terms of size, and there's only going to be more coming out in the near future.
Okay, so Joel, there's a thought there, and that sends me back to Fleet Karma Online. They talked about trends for 2018. One of their trends was multiple long-range EVs below $30,000 in the U.S. market and at multiple sizes. And they write that though Tesla's Model 3 rollout was less than successful, the delays allowed other more established automakers to prep their own long-range EVs for the market. By January of this year, the new Nissan Leaf, which has a range of 150 miles, was $29,900 arriving in U.S. dealerships. By mid-year, Leaf will join the Chevy Bolt EV, $37,500 before incentives, and Model 3 Tesla at the low end of the market. So for the first time ever, consumers will have three quality choices with fast charging options and enough range to curb most anxiety. It does sound like, Carolyn, that if you went back 5 years ago or even 3 years ago and today, there's a lot more options out there.
Definitely.
And is that what, Sue, is that what you found?
I think that, you know, for those who have anxiety about how far they can go or, you know, but they still want to get an electric car, I think a plug-in hybrid is a good option because for the most part, if you're committed, you can do most of your driving in electric mode. And so you're still achieving what you wanted to achieve. But if you're not quite ready to make that leap to fully electric, something like that would be a good option. It allows a lot of flexibility, and it allows me to be a real sort of opportunist about when and where I charge. If I'm driving around and I see a charging station in a parking garage, I'm like, oh, I'll just plug in here. I don't worry about it as much, but I do think about it.
Here's a comment from Deborah on Twitter. She says, I would buy an EV if charging at home and work was easy, that charging on the go was quick and easy, and a bonus if solar or wind helped with charging. So that is for Deborah. That's the point here. So let's get back to the Workplace Charging Challenge, because if you've got six members of the chamber already signed up to do this, you know, that's half a dozen is a small start, but that's not nothing at all. But Carolyn, what's realistic for a goal here? What do you really think could happen in a year, 3 years, 5 years in Rochester and in Western New York?
Gosh, well, we would love to see, you know, the majority of businesses offer workplace charging. One thing I'll just note, right now in the greater Rochester area, there's about 80 charging stations available to the public. And when we started the program, Rock EV, in June, that number was closer to 65. So the infrastructure is expanding very rapidly.
What's an example? Where you find one?
Oh, they're all over. The city of Rochester actually has 12 stations that are available in public lots and garages. And that's 12 stations that have 24 ports, so they can support 24 cars at once. They are at some of the garages around town, at the public market, out at the Port of Rochester. And they are actually planning to install more in the near future. So, like I said, there's more charging stations than people think. They're just not always obvious. So, you know, once you start to be aware of where they are, you kind of see them everywhere.
Ben, when it comes to getting more companies to do this, what's the most successful American market that we've seen, and how many companies are we talking about actually doing workplace charging? We there, Ben? Have I lost Ben?
Sorry. Yeah. The phone had a little issue there.
Apologies. Yeah. So I don't know if you heard the question. Let me ask again. I want to know what the biggest success story we've seen around the country is when it comes to workplace charging availability, and how many companies we're actually seeing in a place like that.
Sure. Here's a couple examples. During the Workplace Charging Challenge launched nationally, and so in 2010, there were 38 partners. In 2016, there were almost 800. So that gives you a sense of how quickly businesses are jumping on board. And these represent thousands upon thousands of employees who then have access to charging. Some of the top areas, you know, there's some top sort of metro regions. So you'd look at places like Portland, Oregon, Detroit, Michigan, Chicago, even places like, you know, Atlanta, Georgia, Raleigh, North Carolina. So they really are all over the country. And I think what's often started it is having the kind of leadership like we have from the chamber locally, the participation from the city like we have from the city of Rochester, and efforts like Rock EV that are kind of the initial start, and then it very quickly expands from there. So I think we can see really big things in Rochester.
I'm going to grab another phone call, and this is Johnny in Rochester who wants to weigh in on what it's like charging at home. Go ahead, Johnny.
Yeah, I was just concerned that maybe all the talk of workplace charging might make people think that they need that to get an EV. I've had a Nissan Leaf 2014 for 3 years, and have only I drive to Victor for work from Rochester, and I only charge it at home. And it's installing a level 2 charger, which will charge it in a few hours, really isn't a big deal. I mean, the charging cable setup that you install costs several hundred dollars, maybe like $500 when I bought it. I think they're cheaper now. But then to get the outlet installed for most houses would not be a big deal to have that installed on the outside of your house or in your garage. It's basically like an electric dryer outlet, like a 240-volt outlet. So it's really quite easy. And as a driving around town or even a commute that's like a 30-minute commute, it's easy for me. And I do admit that we have a family car that we can take on trips, and I'm hoping the next time I have to buy one of those, I can buy an electric as well. But still, for driving around Rochester and around the area, I mean, even an older Nissan Leaf with maybe an 80-mile range is perfect.
Johnny, thank you for the phone call. Not only good information, but also a really good point here. I mean, I don't want, and nobody at the table wants the listeners to take the message from this hour that you get an EV if you can charge it at work. It's just, I think we go back to what Ben Prochazka was saying earlier, which is that we just know that if workplaces offer it, people are much more likely to consider it, and that what they're trying to do is kind of change a culture. So that's part of what's going on here, but it's a good point from Johnny, and I know Sue wanted to weigh in as well on some of her experience when it comes to home charging, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I don't charge at work either, and I think that's a really good point that you don't necessarily need to be able to do that, but I think this is really important because a lot of the people who would be interested in getting an electric car are people who live in houses or apartments that don't have the option to charge. And there's a paradox there where you have a lot of young talent that would be just the type of people who'd be interested in getting an electric car and just happen to not have those facilities at home, which makes the workplace option something that could tip them over the edge. Say, well, I can just charge every day and don't have to worry about it at home.
What a great point. And that's part of what they're trying to do with the Workplace Charging Challenge. But we'll remind you before we go here what's going on 1 week from today. But let me scramble through a few more comments here. Lauren writes to us and says, I've owned a plug-in Prius since 2012. Same thing Sue owns.
A little different.
A little different?
I think that's the precursor to the Prius Prime.
Oh, very good.
Splitting
okay.
hairs.
Okay, so a plug-in Prius since 2012. I charge on a standard outlet. My electrician said that if I were to buy an all-electric vehicle, I would need to upgrade my panel to 150 and 200 if I had two EVs. Does that make sense, Carolyn?
I'm going to defer to Ben on that one.
Yeah, Ben, does that sound like you'd have to upgrade in that situation?
Maybe. The quick answer is sometimes the panel will need to upgrade. That's just something where it depends on the age of the house, but a lot of houses are going to be fully capable to plug into a standard outlet and require no additional upgrades. So it's an easy thing that somebody can check, and they can ask their electrician if they need to upgrade their panel or not.
Okay. I'm sorry, Ben, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to finish that it's one of those things where this is normally easier than people think and takes way less time and way less money than people think.
All right, real quick here, Michael in Penfield wanted to know what percentage of vehicles on the road right now is EV versus conventional. Anybody know? I mean, the numbers I have is 2017 was the best year for EV sales ever, and it was still only roughly 1% of the market. I don't know if Ben, Carolyn, if you have anything that disputes that or Is that roughly what you hear?
Yeah.
I'll go ahead and jump in. We're still roughly around 1% of the market. We have a long ways to go. A lot of predictions, though, are putting, that each year we're going to continue to see huge increases. Year over year, we saw a 22% increase in sales in 2017. There's things like the Bloomberg New Energy Finance that says by 2040 or 2050, we'll see a 54% of the cars purchased will be EVs. So we have a ways to go, but we're seeing a lot of great trends around EV buying.
I mean, 5 years ago, it was almost nothing on the road. And the International Energy Agency says by the end of 2016, there were 2 million EVs on the road. So you go from roughly zero to 2 million in 5 years, and you can see the path run. That's it. We are out of time. So if you want to do the Workplace Charging Challenge, Carolyn Levine, what's coming up 1 week from today?
It's Tuesday, March 6th, 4:45 to 7 p.m. at Radio Social, and we'll be raffling off a Level 2 charging station valued at over $2,000, donated by EV Charge Solutions. So a great opportunity to learn about workplace charging and maybe even win a charging station for your company.
And if you want to sign up and take the pledge on the Workplace Charging Challenge, do more on that. Where can you go?
Yep. Email us, info@rochesterevs.com.
Okay. info@rochesterevs.com. I want to thank everyone for coming in and tell us about the challenge. We'll see going forward. Carolyn Levine from the Rochester Electric Vehicle Accelerator, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Our thanks as well to Sue Hopkins for sharing her experience. Thank you,
thanks.
Sue.
Thanks, Evan.
Shannon Ely coming in from the chamber. Thank you, Shannon. Good having you.
Thank you.
And Ben Prochazka from the Electrification Coalition. Thank you, Ben.
Thank you so much for having me.
A lot of great stuff this hour. Thanks, Rob, Megan. I'm Evan. Talk to you tomorrow.